This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Open for Business. My name is Rich Bradbury. With only 11 years left to achieve Agenda 2030, we are considered the last generation to end global challenges such as poverty, inequality, climate and environmental degradation. Agenda 2030 could possibly be a last-ditch effort to ensure a better future. As I mentioned, I'm Rich Bradbury and you're listening to Open for Business. With me today is...
Håkon Kjøl, the chair of Digi, but also the senior vice president for Telenor Group in Asia, looking at partners and external relations.
And he's here to help discuss how businesses can realign their strategies, measure and manage their contributions to the Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Richard.
First of all, you were doing on a panel this morning.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the panel this morning organized by Digi and a number of partners, including them the main association which organizes the small medium enterprises in Malaysia, was actually put together to not necessarily provide a lot of answers, but to raise questions and learnings from the large corporates to the smaller corporates. Two reasons for that, I think. One is that there's a lot of debate currently on what is the sustainability agenda and how does the SMEs fit into that. And naturally, clearly, they are part of the solution as well. So we try to, you know, balance out some topics, maybe raise some questions, but also be a little bit of an inspiring in a way to so that people understand that we've done it. It's possible for everyone to do.
So for people who might not be familiar with sustainable development and sustainable development goals, what are the goals in sustainable development?
Well, there are quite a number of them. There are 17 sustainable development goals developed by the United Nations that in a way puts in place key performance indicators, which we all have to contribute towards to be able to achieve them within 2030. We in Telenor has decided to focus on one of them, and that is reducing inequalities. And the reason for that is that we believe that we are at a critical point when it comes to making sure that everybody continues on the journey on digitalization. We think that there is a risk that people are left behind, but at the same time, we also think that we bring along business practices which are more global to some of the markets where we operate in Asia, in particular, in the more emerging markets, where we raise also standards in the way that we operate. But the sustainability goals are, in a way, setting a direction for the public, but also for government and for private enterprise to come together and try to address some of the more critical challenges that we are facing as a planet.
Almost like a roadmap.
Yeah, you can say that. It's almost like a roadmap, and it's in a way broken down to a level where it is possible for every single entity to figure out that you have a place in it. And I think that's maybe one of the most important part of that map, is that you are able to look at one of the seventh and say, you know, actually this works for me. And that was also some of the advice to the SMEs today. You don't have to deliver on all of these 17 goals, but find the one where you think makes sense for your business and where you yourself also can actually generate some value for yourself.
Which was what I was going to bring up is why is it important for SMEs to establish stronger standards surrounding their sustainability practice? I mean, we can look outside today and we can see what the haze is like today, and that kind of, you know, points us in a direction, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think the sustainability part is not a strategy you adopt in addition to your business strategy. It should be a part of your business strategy. And I do think that it belongs in the conversation. If you are an entrepreneur or a founder, you will always have it, at least if you are a startup today, the first question you will ask yourself is, what problem are we solving? Right. And then you will ask the second question, who are we solving this problem for? And I do think that if you are a business and a small enterprise today, you need to think about where what kind of solutions are you bringing to the table that solves problems for other people. If you do that, then you have two questions. Am I doing this for the short term or am I doing this for the long term? And I think more and more businesses are in the business for the long term. In other words, you need to focus on an angle which is not only about making a quick buck. You need to think about how do I actually continue to develop a business model which is generating value for me over time. Then the world has changed a little bit, because if you were a business owner 20 years ago, you would most probably only have one important stakeholder, and that was your shareholders. Right. And very often that was yourself. And of course, when it comes to those stakeholders, expectations are clear. Right? Profit is important. That's why you are in business. However, the world has become a little bit more complicated. You have customers, you have employees, you have the community that you operate in, you have the government, and you have society at large, which have expectations towards how you are in a way not only creating value for yourself, but creating a shared value. In other words, you need to be able to, in a way, enlarge the pie and, you know, split it in smaller slices than rather expanding your pie with one slice for yourself only. And as such, it makes a lot of business sense for these small enterprises to kind of take that bet from the outset.
And would you say, though, those, the way in which people see their business and sustainability have changed very quickly over the past few years? Because it seems almost like, as I mentioned to you outside of the studio, just a few years ago, the idea of sustainability was a set of buzzwords, and it was something that was kind of tacked on the end. You know, we make money, but we're also a little bit sustainable. Mm. We have a CSR program, we do it this way. But nowadays, would you say there's a driving force behind this? Would you say it's perhaps the younger generation who are helping to push this idea forward?
I do think that it depends on what kind of industry you have been. I mean, if you have been in our industry for a long time where you operate with long supply chains, you know, we are working in an industry which used to be more of a solid type of value chain. Now we have a fragmented value network where you work with partners, which means that you in a way, you no longer can only assume responsibility for what's within your control, you also need to look outside that. And of course, if you are in food processing, you are in oil and energy, you have true regulation, but also true expectations from owners, investors, but also employees and customers being driven around the road where you include health safety standards, you are focused on your environmental footprint, etc. So for larger corporates, I mean, and one of the panelists today was a representative from Unilever, we had CIMB on the panel and KPMG. For the larger companies, our journey started most probably 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
Now, what is happening, I think, is maybe more important from a consumer perspective, because the demands from customers are changing rapidly. So while in the past, possibly sustainability was more a question of moral standards and ethics, you today see changing behavior on the consumer level every day. Mm. I mean, think about it. You know, you go to your local Kopitiam, you're standing there at the beverage counter. I mean, it's buzzing, it's hot, and then you get a drink, and then the most natural gesture from a generation Y or a Z or even a baby boomer generation is to reach out for the straw. I mean, if you're standing there, I'm very sure many parents around the world are experiencing their children say, "Don't take it."
Yeah.
And that is a completely different shift in terms of taking in and the change in the environment around us into actual behavior, Richard. And I think that's happening quicker.
Yeah.
And as a response to that, you see new entrepreneurs, whether they are millennials or Generation Y or Z, picking up on this because they understand how you can actually build a very sustainable growth strategy for their business by tapping into that shift.
Tell me about that strategy then. So what does it mean for a company to be sustainable? Should every company now, after what you've just said, have a vested interest in sustainability?
Yes, I think so, clearly. And it's about two things. It's about you want to remain competitive, then you need to think more long-term, and you need to take into consideration when you develop that strategy, how are you going to develop value for all stakeholders that you are addressing? Whether that is your customers, which are, in a way, you want to serve your customers well, right? Mm. You want them to buy your product. And I think in that sense, trust in that you're doing things right and actually purchasing decisions, whether it is on the consumer level, but clearly that is already happening on the large scale institutional level in big tender processes, for instance. It's not only the price that matters anymore. You are also in big tender process evaluated. How do you do your business? Mm. Do you have fair labor practices? Do you have a code of conduct which outlaws anti-corruption? So this is not only in a way on the consumer level, but it happened on the enterprise level. Investors, if you meet investors around the world, you have a lot more investor vigilance in terms of asking these questions towards companies. They take positions. Mm. They ask these questions. And if you are attending, investor relations call, you will find that it's not in a way an added question at the end. A lot of these investors actually have very clear strategy themselves. And they make choices based on that.
Yeah.
There are certain companies you invest in, and there are certain you don't invest in. So it's not a matter of having a sustainable sustainability strategy in addition to your business strategy, these things need to be integrated.
How do you think companies are taking to this, though? I mean, I'll give you an example. We have a local food company who have taken the idea of supplying you with a pre-prepared meal, which arrives in a cardboard box. All you have to do is throw your ingredients together. But they started including plastic spoons, and one of the stickers on top was plastic. We gave them feedback and said, look, your food is great. The idea is great. We love the idea. There's just a couple of things that we think that maybe you could make it better. And we told them about this, and they were very receptive to that feedback. Do you think that there are companies as receptive, or are there companies still out there that still push back a little bit?
It very much depends on your perspective. So if you are a purpose-oriented business like ours, the Telenor's vision is about connecting people to what matters most and to empower societies, you have already placed the sustainability part at the center of who you are as a company.
Right.
And we win talent, we win contracts, and we work with partners in collaboration to deliver that every day. Now, of course, if you haven't yet discovered that you need to, in a way, to be competitive in the future, that you need to have a purpose which puts that at the center, then, of course, I can understand the reluctance, because it ends up being an ROI, you know, evaluation every time. So what's the return of this investment short term? I don't think that's very, very useful. I think it's more if you want to stay in business in the long term and you want to see profitable growth over years, you need to be receptive to those input. And then, of course, for a lot of SMEs, then that means that you need to invest. And I think that's maybe the biggest challenge that a lot of them are facing, because some of these will require that you change your operating model maybe. You are willing to pay a little bit higher price to source in your own supply chain products which are more sustainable. But we had a poll today we had a very manual poll, not a digital poll with a show of hands. We went back to that in the panel discussion today, where we asked the audience, and I mean, there are more than 100 SMEs represented in the room, and you ask them, are you prepared to pay a little bit more higher price for a product which you are certain has actually been manufactured or produced in a sustainable way? And I would say maybe 90% of show of hands said, yes, I would be willing to do that. And then I think if you are, in a way, part of a large business supply chain, I mean, at least in the Telenor experience, you go to a market like Bangladesh, you work with one of our companies, you raise your standards to comply with the standards that we have globally, you suddenly open up a new pocket of clients. Clients which are like us, which has the same standards, and in a way allows them for growth in new areas. You would most probably have been able to continue on your old way of working for some years. But in the end, most businesses are likely to, in a way, ask these questions because their owners and their customers demand that of them.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, Paul. I spoke about a news piece last week regarding Whole Foods in the US. Recently, as you probably are aware, they were taken over by Amazon. And they did a poll amongst young people about whether or not they'd be willing to pay extra for their groceries if they knew that they were from a sustainable source, if they knew they were organic. And 77% of those people polled said yes, they would. They were willing to pay up to 13 to 14% more for a product that they knew was sustainable. That's clearly a definition of change, and an indication of change, rather.
I think so, and I think when you look at there was just with a reference point to a state and municipal election in Norway that happened 2 weeks ago. You see younger voters taking a very clear shift on voting towards parties which put sustainability and environmental policies at the heart of what they are doing. It's a dramatic shift.
Yeah,
and it also, if that's an indication which we can see in going forward, young people also want politicians to make policies which are supporting that agenda. So I think there are quite a number of driving forces, both in terms of the way people spend their money and the way they consume, the way businesses procure. But there is also, I think, a stronger will from millennials and younger people to actually get politicians in place which want to give that agenda a big part in the way they develop policies for countries.
Hold that thought. We need to take a very short break. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio on Open for Business here on Enterprise. I'm in the studio with
Håkon Kjøll.
We'll be right back after these messages on BFM 89.9.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome to Open for Business. My name is Rich Bradbury. Today I'm in the studio with
Håkon Kjøl.
He is the chair of the board of Digi and Telenor SVP. He's here to discuss how businesses can realign their strategies, measure and manage their contribution to the sustainable development goals. Let's talk about technology then, and let's talk a little bit about how has technology supported these sustainable development goals?
Well, I think there are two ways of looking at that, Richard. So there is the convenience angle to technology, and then there is the efficiency angle to technology. And if you look at convenience, there is no doubt that if we adopt technology for solutions in our life, whether it is in the way we communicate, the way we purchase goods, but also in the way we build smart cities, optimize energy by using sensors, increase produce in agriculture sector, because we are in a way implementing sensors in the way that we can monitor our crops so that we get a higher yield, there is no doubt that there is a huge upside in terms of convenience and productivity. Then there is the cost angle to it. And that is, of course, the moment we no longer all have to own our own car, but can actually share cars. And of course, there's no problem in sharing cars, but you need to know that we can share. In other words, connectivity and the platform economy comes on top of that, allows us to, in a way, sweat our assets better.
Yeah.
And both of those things, I think, can help to, in a way, address issues around increased consumption, because I also think there is no doubt that if we want to reach some of these goals, we need to consume less of some things. We can consume more of other things, but we need to consume more or less. And at the same time, if it reduces the people's cost and increases convenience, I think you have a rather winning formula. Mm. And in the midst of that, connectivity and the digital platforms are kind of critical. Neither Grab or Uber or Facebook would exist if they didn't have the mobile network to connect them.
Do we find, though, that there's a bit of a balancing act? Because for stuff like connectivity and smart cities and whatever, we have to have a large amount of data.
Yep.
And now when you have large amounts of data and data centers, they consume a lot of electricity,
Absolutely.
They consume a lot of power. How can we resolve that issue?
No, so I think, first of all, we need to then apply our own technology on how we actually build those data centers. And then you need to look for, in a way, ways of building those centers which are not so energy demanding. I mean, think about it. I just met a very interesting Norwegian company which are building solar power works on water. They are floating. And the reason why they do that is that there is natural cooling in the way that when you build it on top of water. So it doesn't cost, actually it's less energy there's no energy going into cooling it, and it produces more electricity. So it's actually a plus sum game, no less consumption and more output. Mm. So if we in a way are able to take that technology and look for and maybe applying the same principles that we do in providing solutions to our customers and do that on our own business processes, I think it's possible to find solutions which will make that more sustainable. Is it going to be carbon neutral? Most probably not, because there will be some consumptions of energy going into it. But it's certainly an area where I think a lot of people are doing a lot of work to make sure that it actually reduces the general footprint.
Have you, on your travels and these meetings that you've been to and these round tables, has there been a company that you've kind of come across who have approached you and they've spoken to you about their approach to being sustainable, and it's really stopped you in your tracks and gone, these guys are brilliant?
Yeah, so I think, yes, there are companies like that, but there's not one single company. There are a lot of people working on multiple ideas. And I think this is also, a little bit of a mega trend, because the challenges around reaching those goals is actually bringing people together.
Right.
In the past, if you're looking at your own bottom line, you will have a tendency to work with the people that you are working with. It's typically your suppliers, typically your customers, your banks, etc. But when you want to solve a very big, large societal problem that we're talking about here, you need to collaborate. Mm. And in that process, you actually meet quite a lot of interesting, both companies, but also individuals, which brings forward solutions that could help. I mean, we worked with someone in how do we make sure that we can build antennas with radio equipment, which doesn't necessarily rely on electricity from the grid. And in the case, in many cases, they end up relying on jet sets to actually fuel that with diesel. But rather look at how could we use wind? How do you, for instance, build a lighter installation which allows you to consume less energy? How do you include solar? How do you work with batteries so that you can, in a way, store that energy much longer? Mm. So I think there are not one single company, but there are multiple of people coming together in a collaborative effort to solve these issues. That needs to escalate, in my view. If you want to reach that ambitious agenda, which I believe there is great hope that we can do, more collaboration would be necessary. And I think you see startup companies which are doing that. They understand what problem they are solving, but they also understand how they need to work with others to achieve their objectives.
Are companies like Telenor and Digi approaching schools and secondary education and universities and kind of helping to educate on this as well?
Yeah, so we not necessarily on the sustainability agenda as such, but more on how technology will play an important part. So we're focused on two things. One is, of course, to extend our research into new technologies like artificial intelligence. We have established the Open AI Lab in Norway. We have the second one in Asia in Bangkok, because we do think that it's an emerging area where we need to understand how this is developed. At the same time, we've played an important part in the European agenda to ensure that we develop artificial intelligence in an ethical way.
Right.
Because when you get new technology coming up, there are new ethical dilemmas that you need to address.
Yeah.
And I think we feel that we need to, in a way, take responsibility for also the potential issues that could emerge from new technology. The second thing that we are doing is to help children and their parents to get the best out of what internet has to offer. But at the same time, we need to learn people the bad things about internet as well. You need to talk to them about cyberbullying. You need to make sure that there is indeed harmful content out there, which you should not spend your time on. And it's instilling the right values into people so that they understand the threats that it is in the internet.
Mm.
This is a big problem because I think a lot of parents don't really understand what their children are doing in cyberspace, and I think we need to build more resilience in the kids themselves to actually understand what's right and what's wrong.
And I think part of that problem is because, you know, for us it was a case of we now have the internet, we can pretty much do anything that we want.
And
how do we use it? And even we are still learning at this stage. And sometimes I would argue that the kids know better sometimes.
Yes. So I think you're right. And I think that also comes from them having had internet in their hands from the day they were born.
I
can still remember when I got the first kind of Microsoft Word software in school, right?
Yeah.
And I think for them, this has been an integral part. And there has been a lot more attention on this topic in the last 10 years than what was at the point of, in a way, mass scale of internet access.
Yeah.
And they have their own experiences. Remember that. Yeah. I don't have a cyberbullying experience when I grew up in school.
Yeah.
But they have live experiences, whether it is themselves, whether it is a friend, or whether it is a classmate or someone they just heard about. They have those reference points, which means that they have an experience which allows them to take action.
Mm.
And I think that's that. But still, we are learning. I mean, hate speech is a topic which I think we spend too little time on. And I think we need to do as an industry. It's getting there, but we have a collective responsibility for addressing that.
I've got one final question before we wrap up. So there are 17 SDGs.
Yeah.
And your personal opinion, do you think that there is one or two that should be prioritized over others?
It's a difficult question to answer, Richard, but I can say that I do think that there is a rising inequality on the planet. The gap between the people who have and the people who don't have is growing. That leads to political polarization as well. And you see that pretty much everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And I do think that addressing the point around inequality so that we don't move into a digital age where 30-40% of the population is left behind at the station, I think that's critical. We need to bring everybody along into a world which allows us to bring with us technology that enables a better future for ourselves. Leaving people behind would be a catastrophe for the planet.
That's a perfect way to wrap up. You've been listening to Open for Business here on BFM 89.9, the business station, with
Håkon Kjøll.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.